Hello, everyone. Today's episode is on the great saint, Saint Ignatius of Loyola. And many people do not think of Ignatius when they think of the mystics. However, he is deeply rooted in mysticism, largely for his spiritual exercises. So today we will open with a story from his life, and then we will get into his biography. And then next week, dive into some of his spiritual exercises. I hope you enjoy, and God bless you. Ignatius laid on the cold, dirty floor of the cave. He had been there for months, and at first, he had to overcome this mortification of flesh. His hunger, his familiarity with the lavishness of his former aristocratic life. But surpassing the pains of his flesh was now over, and thus he was entering a new phase, now battling the spirits inside of his mind and the darkness that exists within his soul. He washed his face in a basin and he stared at his reflection. The once immaculately groomed man was now a long-haired, bearded mess. But again, that's the flesh. What about the spirit? As Ignatius continued to stare, it seemed as if infinite faces were staring back at him, the face of a madman, the face of a bloodthirsty soldier, the face of a womanizer. But then as he'd reach his dirty hands to splash more water onto himself, those faces would disappear, and whispers would enter his mind. Leave the cave. Go back to your castle. Go back to your high-class ways. No, stay here. Stay and be a hermit. Just don't ever leave. Die here, Ignatius. Go. Stay. Go. Stay. Weeks of these conflicting voices have made the already maddened man even more mad. And in a fit of rage, he threw his basin against the stone wall. And in another fit, he kicks a stone and yells to God, just like David did. Though his flesh was not that mortified, because now his foot was shooting with pain, and he fell onto the cold, wet, sharp floor. Holding his foot on his already injured leg, he rocks in pain until he falls asleep. While Ignatius hoped for a break from these conflicting spirits in his dreams, he wasn't safe there either. While laying in bed in his Spanish estate, he used to dream of walking the countryside with St. Francis, but here in the wet cave of Manresa, he was constantly plagued by dreams of snakes. This particular dream had Ignatius walking outside to gather flowers and herbs, but each rose turned into a serpent, striking him before he could place it in the basket. Going back to his cave, he'd look into his basin to wash his face, and handfuls of water turned into handfuls of snakes, and the reflection of his face was a ghastly decomposing head with worms crawling out of his eye sockets. Stay and die, Ignatius, or go back home. Stay, go, stay, go. Ignatius gasped awake. He was laying on his stomach, and while he was sure he was awake, he saw a blurry figure slithering towards him. Can it be? It can't. This time I surely am awake. But then the hiss of the snake became more clear as its black, shimmering body and red tongue became visible in his view. Ignatius was frozen. Maybe in fear, maybe in exhaustion, or maybe just in resolution. It came closer and closer. He could now see the snake's slanted eyes, its horned nostrils, and its mesmerizing movements. He could smell it and almost feel its coldness. Ignatius took a breath, his arms paralyzed, his feet unable to move, ready to accept the strike of the beast, the same creature which led Eve astray, was now to become the demise of Ignatius. He sees the snake recoil, and as it lunges forward, its jaws ungodly wide, a foot slams on top of its head, crushing it. Ignatius looks up and sees her, the Mother of God standing before him, the same Mother of God to whom he relinquished his sword and armor to just a few months ago, the Mother of God with her foot on the head of the serpent. She smiles at him. He tries to bow, he tries to cry, he tries to do something, but he is too awestruck by her radiance and her sweetness, as well as the resolute feeling of this dead serpent underneath her heel. She then makes her exit towards the foot of the cave, and the entrance barely visible, he sees her with another figure, the glowing image of the resurrected Christ, who then leave the cave together. "I," Ignatius starts, "I will follow your footsteps, Lord, and I will kiss every step along the way." Free from his shock and free from the serpentine spirits, Ignatius makes his way out of the cave and sets forth on another pilgrimage, but not before picking up his journal. A journal that would later teach many of us how to battle our own serpents, our own conflicting spirits, and with the crush of a heel, how we too can walk the same path as the Lord. This is another episode of St. Anthony's Tongue, and I'm your host, W. Peace be with you and with your spirit. Welcome to another episode of St. Anthony's Tongue. I am your host, W. Today we will be discussing a very unique and interesting saint, and it may even surprise some people that he is included in the mysticism series. However, Ignatius of Loyola is a lovely, deep, and beautiful mystic who can teach us so much about discernment, about spirits, and more. So Ignatius was born in 1492 to a very noble family, and he was your stereotypical macho soldier, or at least he always wanted to be a soldier. There's a quote about him in his young life, and the quote is, it says that Ignatius was a fancy dresser, an expert dancer, a womanizer, sensitive to insult, and a rough, punkish swordsman who used his privileged status to escape persecution for violent crimes committed with his priest brother during carnival time. So there you go, a womanizer, a punk, a brute, also privileged and stuck up. That was his whole thing. And he did get to become a soldier, and there are some conflicting stories about what his rank actually was. He likely was a bit more of a strategist, but even though that was his rank, again, this was a privileged, noble man, so he was still going around the battlefield and barking orders regardless. And in one specific battle with the French, there was a cannonball that came and struck him right in the knee and the calf, essentially blowing part of it off. And that wounded him, obviously, so they brought him back to his estate to have surgery and be bedridden. And while the surgery was successful, he actually was so vain that he did not like how his leg looked in his formal evening attire, his fancy pants that he would wear. So he actually had the doctor reset it, so re-break it and set it again so it would look better. That's just how vain young Ignatius was. And during this healing, during his time to recover from his many surgeries, he wanted something to read. He was bored. He was laying in bed. Unfortunately, the family just cleared out their entire library, donating it, except for two books. One is The Golden Legend, which is your quintessential compilation of saint stories, and the other was The Life of St. Francis, written by St. Bonaventure. Of course, the macho manly soldier that Ignatius was, he did not want to read these two books on saints. Instead, he wished he had books on knights and battles and so on and so forth. So he said, well, how about I'll just use my imagination? I'll just sit here and daydream about winning wars and winning battles and wooing women and sword fights. But eventually, as his recovery was many months, that started to get old. So he began to read some of the Golden Legend and some of St. Francis. And he began to see parallels in his life. So for instance, St. Francis of Assisi, he too was injured in battle, and he was bedridden, just like Ignatius was. So then he started thinking, well, how did he become such a saint? You know, how was he so able to get away from the worldliness? What did this great man see? And he also saw similar themes, of course, in other saint lives in the book The Golden Legend. And then Ignatius began to stop daydreaming about war and instead daydream about St. Francis. And then he started to have dreams. In one dream, he was walking and talking in the forest with St. Francis. And he didn't know where they were going, but eventually they ended up in front of the manger, the nativity scene, and they both prayed in front of the child Christ. And he kept having these dreams and these thoughts. And that really became the first big aha moment in the life of St. Ignatius, was this question of, well, what do I want to do with my life? Do I want this worldly life? Do I want to be a soldier in battle? Or do I want to be like these saints? And instead of pursuing a kingdom in Spain, pursue a kingdom of heaven. And this continued on and on. And eventually he recovered and he was ready to go back into battle. He likely would have had to take more of a backseat role. He probably wouldn't have been on the field, but he didn't want to go. He was so moved by these lives of the saints. And eventually he had a vision of the Virgin Mary above his bed with Christ. And as they started to fade away, he remembers himself saying, I will follow you and I will kiss your footsteps. And by this, he meant that he would go on a pilgrimage towards Jerusalem to literally follow in the footsteps of Christ. Now, this mirrors St. Francis and the Franciscans because they were known for hosting pilgrimages in the Holy Land. So that starts the journey of St. Ignatius of Loyola. So he goes off on this pilgrimage, and in one scene, he stops in a place called Montserrat, and he has his armor and he has his sword, and he goes into a shrine of the Black Madonna of Mary. And there, he leaves his armor and he leaves his sword in front of the Virgin Mary, essentially saying, now I follow you. You are now my queen. And then he sees a beggar outside, and he basically says, hey, give me your sackcloth. Give me the clothes you are wearing. There is armor in the shrine. There is nice clothes in the shrine. You can take those. So then he switches his clothing for a sackcloth, and he goes and begins to beg. And he remained a beggar for many, many months. And he ended up taking residence in a place called Manresa, which was a cave. And that's what the introductory story was about. And here he stays in the cave, and he really reflects on his life, on his discernment of what to do next with his life. And also, he was getting messages from spirits and how to discern if this was a good message or a bad message. And essentially going through all of these meditations and exercises. He would later write down, or actually while he was in the cave, he would write down all of these exercises, and they would become what is his hallmark mystical text, which is the Spiritual Exercises. And we're going to get into all of that later in this episode and next week's episode. But in that moment was his first illumination. And that's when he essentially described not necessarily what was a visual mystical experience, but more so he did describe a presence of God and the Virgin Mary. But it was more, he said, he felt like he was filled with wisdom. He was filled with knowledge and the loving light, which sounds to me like the true gift of the Holy Spirit, which is wisdom. We can be filled with that. And he would then later take these experiences and this wisdom and this knowledge that he found, this knowledge on how to commune with God and how to connect with God and how to listen to God. He would begin going and preaching that out in the town square. And he ended up getting a rather large following. However, there was a problem, and that was this beggar, who was not a priest, who was not a minister of any kind, was now going and preaching about God. And this was the time of the Spanish Inquisition. So that caught the attention of church officials. And he was put in a holding cell, actually, until they could review these spiritual exercises. And long story short, after a brief trial, they did say that these exercises were fine to teach. However, he would have to first go and become a priest before he can continue. And he did. It's said that a benefactor paid for his education, and some even say it was one of the inquisitors because they were so impressed with his work. And during his study at the University of Paris, I believe, he founded the Jesuit order, which is called the Society of Jesus, but well, it's called the Jesuits. It means Society of Jesus. And they took religious vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. They are unique because they specifically had a special obedience to the Pope, and they were always in his service. And this is interesting because our current Pope, Pope Francis, is a Jesuit, and many believe we would never have a Jesuit Pope because the Jesuits are always seen to be in service of them rather than becoming one. And this was also a missionary order, and they would go out and spread the word of God. But unlike other orders, they weren't cloistered, they were not tied to any specific location. And their ability to live and be anywhere, this meant that Jesuits could be found in small rural town churches, but also advisors to kings and kingdoms, and missionaries in Asia and South America. But today they're best known for being the founders and being the inspiration of universities around the world. That's kind of what they're known now for. I can list off probably 25 schools and colleges I know with the name Loyola in it. I'm cutting through a lot here, but he died in 1556 and he was canonized in 1609. And I think he is now best known for his tie-in with education. He does have a beautiful rule. The rule of the Jesuits, I think, is very nice. It's all about understanding, seeking wisdom, and being on fire with God's love. But that time in the cave where he wrote the spiritual exercises, that is what he is very much known for. So today, these spiritual exercises are still widely practiced. They are largely practiced in a retreat format led by a Jesuit priest or some other retreat leader. And the retreat can be done for many things, but go back and look at the life of St. Ignatius of Loyola. He is bedridden, and he uses his imagination to see what he must do next in life by comparing the worldly life to the life of the saints. Then in the cave in Manresa, which is the name of the cave, he also had to discern if this was good or evil spirits he was hearing from. So therefore, these retreats are often held to discern those same things, to discern our vocation in life, or to discern messages from God, or, you know, the spirits we're hearing, are they in our best interest? Are they worldly? Are they godly? Or if you want to say good or evil, demonic or angelic, you can say that too. Or it could just be discern your next step in your life from a spiritual point of view. You know, where, how am I doing spiritually and what's my next step? I know many people do this retreat annually. And these exercises are meant to be done with a spiritual leader, and they will kind of tweak it based on the group too. So it can be more individualized and personalized. And it's funny though, because this is a very common spiritual retreat, and yet many don't even realize this is a deeply mystical event. They may call it prayer, they may just look at it as prayer, but this is mysticism. This is contemplative prayer sessions, and it's listening for God's voice, which is what contemplation really is. So next episode, we're really going to break down some of the practical things from these exercises that we can do in our own spiritual life. But the first, I'm going to just kind of generally term Ignatian prayer, and that is kind of what it is called as well, generally. And this isn't necessarily part of the spiritual exercises, it's more so a theme you see throughout all of them, but this is a hallmark in the Jesuit exercises, and it's imaginative prayer to an extent. So this was a key thing that Ignatius taught. And remember, think about his bedridden time. Think about his time in the cave. There was a lot of imagination there. So Ignatius teaches us that God can speak to us even through our own minds, thoughts, and imaginations. So throughout the spiritual exercises, one will use imagery and use visualization to really put ourselves into a specific Bible story. Let's say when Jesus calms the storm, your retreat leader, or this is something you can do for yourself, which we'll discuss more in next episode, will essentially get you to really put yourself in that boat with the apostles and with Christ and go through all of your senses. What can you see? What can you hear? What can you taste? What can you touch? What can you smell? And then through some more building upon that, you kind of discern what God is trying to tell you and speak to you with. And this is kind of a main concept for Ignatius. And frankly, I think this should be a main concept for all meditation. When we meditate upon the mysteries of the rosary, rather than just meditating upon them, we should really put ourselves there and see what we can discern. I think there's kind of two levels to that. One would be the more intellectual, what is this telling me about God's love and Christ's story? But then there's also the personal, what could this be telling me about me? So we're going to get more into some of the other exercises too. There's some really cool ones at the back of the book, the back of the spiritual exercise book, that I don't think are really done often. Some are even linked with your breath. We're going to get into that next episode. But I really appreciate his mysticism because it's very hands-on. As we've discussed in some of our previous topics, our previous discussions on like mystical prayer and general mysticism, there's positive and negative theology, right? Positive is, what can I say about God? What can I see about God? Maybe nature mysticism would be positive. I can see God working through all things. Or even, I can tell you about Christ's love due to his sacrifice, so on and so forth. Then there's apophatic or negative theology, which is, I cannot really tell you exactly what God is. I can tell you what God is not, though. That's more St. John of the Cross and some others, the cloud of unknowing, right, where we can't get too intellectual. While I would say Ignatius isn't neither. Instead, he's right there in the middle. God is not super present, but God is not too far away. God is always there, but he is more focused on experience. He is more focused on God right in front of us through exercises, through prayer, and I think there's something unique there. But his work and his style is really heavy on mysticism. We're going to get into more spiritual exercises next week. I know I've said that quite a bit now. But let's just talk about this great saint overall. So as far as miracles and his mystical experiences, so it was very common in this time, as well as in Spain, it seems. So this area where saints would write about their experiences, but they would be very vague and humble. For instance, Teresa of Avila would say, I've heard it's not uncommon for this thing to happen, but essentially she's suggesting this happened to me. It's kind of hint, hint, wink, wink. And Ignatius kind of does the same thing. He does mention quite a few kind of spiritual experiences he has. So being bedridden, he did see Mary and Christ, in which he said, I will follow your footsteps and kiss the ground where you walked. And then also in the cave, he didn't really necessarily mention that he saw Mary, but he felt her, and he felt Christ. And thus, I would also say he felt the Holy Spirit as he felt wisdom kind of go through him. There's another, though, where it was before he was formally ordained, and he was sitting in the church looking at the crucifix beyond the altar, and it said that he heard God speaking to Christ on the crucifix, and God told Jesus that Ignatius was now under his care and protection, and it said that he received a blessing from Christ himself on the altar. And there's also a lot of depictions of Ignatius performing exorcisms. There's one particular famous painting that I'm sure you can just find with a quick Google search. And it's really interesting. There's a lot going on there. But this story goes that he was just performing a mass, just completing a mass. And some prayers and some rites of mass have a very simple exorcism involved. And during that, demons began violently leaving bodies of people in the congregation. So he's also said to have this power over the demonic. And that would make sense, right? Because his whole thing was discerning if what we're hearing and feeling is of God or of the other side, of the dark side. So when I was researching this episode, I was really excited because I found a mention in a book that said that Ignatius is tied to vampires and warding off vampires. And there was also a ritual in which on Ignatius's feast day, pigs are slaughtered and the fat can protect us from evil and vampires. I was disappointed, though, to find that this was wrong. So if you do see this in a book, this isn't St. Ignatius of Loyola, it's St. Ignatius of Antioch. So briefly, there is a tradition of St. Ignatius of Antioch where his feast day in Romania, it's called the Feast of the Pigs, and it is believed that a pig slaughtered on that day has some healing properties in folklore. But unfortunately, it's not our guy. There's nothing of the sort with Ignatius of Loyola. So there isn't a lot of fun folklore. He's one of those teachers where it's more about his exercises and his teachings. He's still a great saint, though. So how to venerate him and honor him? So his feast day is July 31st. He is the patron of spiritual retreats. And I will say a spiritual retreat does not necessarily have to be you physically going to an abbey or a retreat house or a monastery. A spiritual retreat can be a weekend at your home in which you create it too. So I would also kind of say spiritual seekers in general. He's the patron of a ton of cities and dioceses. But if we look at his story, I think we can pull out some ways he can assist us in our lives through his intercession. One would be soldiers. He was a warrior. He was wounded in battle. So if you or a loved one is suffering from PTSD or they are a soldier, they are in the military and need protection, I think Ignatius would be good. Those recovering from surgery, as he was recovering from his surgeries. Writers, too. He was a notable writer, not only for his spiritual exercises, but I believe we have more letters from him than any other historical figure in that time period. He was a very prolific writer because he was writing to all of his missionaries around the world while he was still running the order. And also against spiritual warfare and evil, right? His spiritual exercises are largely about making the right decision and listening to God rather than the dark side. He's also a great saint for when we need to make any kind of big decision. So let's say we want to do a novena. Next week, we're going to get into a few simplistic, down-to-earth spiritual exercises from his book, Spiritual Exercises. So we can do those during a novena. But other ideas, I would say he had a great devotion to Our Lady. So if you want to do a novena, let's say you want to discern something or you just want his protection, I would incorporate Our Lady in the novena somehow. And most people do. That can be a rosary, that can be praying the Angelus, whatever it is. And also with any writer saint, I'd recommend ending that novena by reading some of his works, the spiritual exercises, his autobiography, or even some of his letters. So kind of in conclusion, he's a really great and underrated saint. I know that a lot of what I want to say about him is going to be done next week. I apologize. I feel like I said I'm going to get into that next week 100 times in this episode. But he's a really interesting and unique saint, and I think he's one of those that he has so much going on, right? He is the founder of one of the largest religious orders. He is known for his order being used in universities and schools globally. He's known for his retreats. Therefore, he's known for all of these things, and I think his status as a mystic kind of gets put to the side. But it really shouldn't, especially since his writings are very mystical. And I think it's also easy to overlook how versatile he can be as a patron. Everything from writing, recovering from an illness, spiritual warfare, discernment. He's a really great ally to have. So I hope you've enjoyed this brief episode on St. Ignatius of Loyola. And again, there is so much more we can say. He is, again, the founder of one of the largest religious orders in the world. I'm glossing over a lot. So I had hope this at least whetted your appetite to dive in more, as well as to listen to next week when we start getting into his approaches to mystical prayer. May God bless you, and may St. Ignatius of Loyola pray for us.